everybody. Welcome to part 2 of episode 3 of What You Do in Pod. This is the second part of my really big interview with Jack and Cameron from the Panic Institute. As you can tell, the first part was pretty long. Both of these together would have been way too long. I figure breaking it up, making it a little more digestible for people was overall a really good idea. Again, thank you to Jack and Cameron for coming on the show. I don't need to do a big ramble. This is part 2. You've already heard all the things. So let's get into it.
Okay. I appreciate the break. She absolutely needed it. So it was a good call all around there.
Oh my God, Matt.
Oh, I didn't grab soda.
Oh yeah, please. Yeah. If you need a minute, take a minute, please.
Oh my God. Matt, wait, we've met before, right? At one of Jack's playtest things.
Yeah. Jack did a little mothership test thing. And you popped in for a little bit.
Scampered away.
Yeah. Which is fine. I'm gonna do the thing that I do all the time. You're so big and important. You meet so many people. You don't know. You know. I'm just whoever.
Look at my sun dappled face. Look at this. Look how dappled it is.
I love his response to this. I love God.
Is he deflecting?
Yes.
Yeah. Classic.
Look how insane it makes.
Yeah, you do look insane. You do look insane.
Yeah. It's making me think of your look for Doggy Dog. I really love your whole.
Oh man, the
like
vibes.
I just love you have a whole look. You have a whole like.
How would you describe
character that you're embodying? You look like not a Bond villain. You look like the villain in a TBS Bond movie. Like you look like somebody wanted.
This is a podcast. That's when you would like cut to it. That's so funny.
It's really but like tell me I'm wrong, you know?
No,
like,
it gives the just the right amount of B horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. You look like the backup villain from the Hunger Games.
That's the sweetest thing anyone's ever said to me.
to me it gives it does give like German dog trainer. That is exactly the
that was literally what I thought, Jack. I was like after I said the Hunger Games, I was like, he looks like he was the guy who would like breed the dogs that would kill them.
Yeah, exactly. Should we talk about Doggy Dog?
Yeah. Yeah. So as excited I am as I am to talk about Doggy Dog, I do want to touch on Void Stream.
Okay.
The last thing, or I guess the first thing. Mm-hmm. That y'all have worked on, or was it the first thing? Is there some secret origin before that?
Void Stream was just the thing that we ended up.
We kind of covered it. Yeah,
yeah.
We kind of popped into his DMs and was like, "Hello to the person or persons who established Fine Dungeon Club. May I perhaps join you for a tea?" And then from there,
that's what became Void Stream.
It was a situation where Cameron had an opportunity and needed some support, and Void Stream was just a very interesting project because we were kind of learning how we were going to work with each other. So we were friendly at that point, but we hadn't done any, you know, it's nice to know people, but then the moment you're like, here's some deadlines and expectations and money's changing hands and stuff, that can be that can make things not good. But it was kind of like that project started, and it started because he started it without me, and then it was like, well, I kind of do you want to be on, be a part of this? You want to help out? And then it became like a full fledged like partnership after we'd already launched the campaign.
That's how it goes though. Sometimes oh hey, wait a minute.
Well, we just kind of realized that that there was not even that it was more like we got inspired. I'd say it was like we saw the thing we were already making was really cool, and then it was like, oh, what if we did this? And what if what if these things worked together this way? And then it just became but that was literally like you hit me up about that like a week before,
weeks
before. So it was one of the situations where it was this beautiful stranger said, "Hey, do you want some candy?" And I was like, "Sure, let's do it." And it was a good learning process. A lot of different things. Less on the side of like making the product or like making the project, because that was, I think, where our strengths are already, but in like, I don't know, figuring out. So when we were done with that, you know, and then Sean was like, hey, Cameron, you should just do this instead. We had already kind of decided that, hey, we should probably just, let's not get in over our heads.
Cool it until we ship.
Let's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And then they were like, well, you know, we kind of need you to do this. And then the actual play. So, but this time around, I feel like we were way more, but back to VoiceStream. So yeah, we basically were like, let's do this. And VoiceStream started as a, now Matt, Cameron has played one of our playtests of VoiceStream. So he was in one of my playtest groups when I did that.
That's right.
So Matt does have a pretty solid understanding of at least where the project was at that point of like what it is. But that started as like a one page. It was just going to be like, I was just going to design a one sheet.
Jack, is one of the sound stages in SOS, is it the moon landing? Because if it's not, we need that.
One of them is the moon landing, yeah.
Oh, thank God. Okay, yeah. I thought I dreamed that. But no, you can, yeah, that's really important.
It's a moon landing, but it's a good chance. So I think the biggest difference, because A, VoidStream is not like a panic table. We've never quantified that as part of like the panic table world, because the panic table has a very specific, Cameron's built this world.
He's specifically like, unaccompanied minors.
Yeah. And Doggy Dog is part of the unaccompanied minors, like greater lore. There's no reason VoidStream isn't. We just never quantified it.
Yeah, there's nothing to separate it. And you're just
like, all right.
Other than I do like that Doggy Dog is set on Earth, and I think that VoidStream is heavily alluded to be set on Earth, but it could potentially be any colony, any like as Star Trek would say, an M class planet. That got colonized. It could not be Earth. It could be.
I think it's important too that it's fuzzy at the edges with VoidStream. Yeah, like you shouldn't, to pinpoint it is to miss the point. I think.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I was going to say that leads to kind of the idea of VoidStream. So if people listening aren't familiar with VoidStream, it's kind of a toolkit of games is kind of how I would describe it. It's an adventure, but it feels less like, here is an adventure that takes place at X and these things happen, and more, here are things that can happen and places where these things can happen. Mm-hmm. And kind of the most exciting part for me, obviously, is the audio and visual elements that go along with it. Because Jack's a big found horror guy. I know from, you know, his TikToks and conversations we've had. And so bringing that sort of texture, it's kind of the only word I can think to use to these sorts of things is, I think, a really interesting concept.
So the whole conceit being that it is it's audio and video, and you can use those in your game. And we wanted to build a scenario to help guide players or guide game runners, wardens, through the process of how you would implement the VoidStream audio and video assets into your games. And then we just kept evolving the idea so that they function perfectly well in the ecosystem of the game itself, and you don't need to... We wanted it to be a little bit of everything for everybody, right? We wanted it to be like, if I'm interested in those for my games, I can just grab those and I can just use those. I don't have to use this scenario.
Right.
Or this can be an entirely inclusive experience if you only ever use the VoidStream audios with the SOS, with the source of signal game, the scenario that comes with it, then that would be a special thing unto itself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is a toolkit. It's more of a toolkit. And everything else kind of poured out of there.
Yeah, and so I like that, like you said, like it could be Earth. It would be Earth adjacent. But it's not Earth, because, you know, right, when we did the playtest, like, it was on a planet, you know, it was a facility on a planet, but there's nothing stopping it from being a space station in orbit. Yeah. There's nothing stopping it from just being
the region just called Old Wine Country. Road. So it's not even a, you know, the quarantine zone. Yeah, it's purposely ambiguous because found footage stuff is ambiguous. I mean,
I love the idea of finding a derelict ship called Old Wine Country. That's a great ship name. That's such a banger ship name.
All right, well, we'll change the location of Voidstream's region so you can use it as a ship later.
We have to cut this part. This is hanging.
Cameron's gonna leave it in. Give him the listeners the.
Yeah, old wine.
I love it. That's definitely making it into the unaccompanied minors world. That's so fantastic.
I need to read the culture books. Are you familiar with the culture series, Ian and Banks? You'd probably dig it. It's like far flung sci-fi future.
Mm-hmm.
In that there is this advanced AI, like people. You know, it would be incorrect to like call it a race. But imagine if we built robots, they gained sentience, left for 20,000 years,
mm-hmm.
and then we also went to space and then met, and they had like their own shit going on. But not everyone in the culture is a robot. Like, it has just as many humans and aliens and stuff. But the reason I bring it up is all of their ship names are... Now you would call it like named by ChatGPT because they're just like snippets of text from like famous works.
What this podcast is about now.
Yeah,
we're Googling. I have a similar experience, but the influence is not from a really good book series. It is instead from the early 2000s musical We Will Rock You. The far future, and they have no record of their past except through pop culture. So you have like there's a big burly masculine character. His name is Britney Spears because he just knows Britney Spears is a rock star from the past, and they're all like in love with
that's the great. Idea
of being rock stars, even though they don't know what the music is.
Right, and they have no reference for anything. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, Britney Spears.
It's a really bad musical. It's very bad.
In the first book, you get ships that are called the prosthetic conscious, the nervous energy, the irregular apocalypse, no more Mr. Nice Guy, the profit margin, the ends of invention.
Mr. Nice Guy is so
in the second. In the second book, you can tell he figured out the ones that people liked. You mm-hmm. have just read the instructions. Of course, I still love you. So much for subtlety. Unfortunate conflict of evidence.
These are kiss my ass.
Yeah, and that's
so much for subtlety is fantastic.
What I love about and why I really want to read the books is the culture is the gay space communist future. Gotcha. Where like there's no scarcity, there's no mm-hmm. like everybody's needs are met, and so of course they have immediate conflict with the human empire.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Like Ian M. Banks, he wrote like 12 books. They're great. It's one of those.
I don't read books that don't have mechanics in them, unfortunately. So
what is book?
Okay. Every time you finish the book, Jack, roll a d6, and on a 3+, you get to read the next page.
By that logic, I should read all the Alien novels because they all have many Alien RPG adventures in the back.
Is that true?
Yeah, which is very.
That's
cool.
Kind of great.
All the new ones have scenarios that are that turn the book's elements into.
That rules.
The playable elements you could use in the game. Yeah,
that's why I'm not reading the new Arkham Horror comic series from Dark Horse, because the last one they did had cards for the Arkham Horror card game that mm-hmm. I love, and the new one doesn't. And I'm like, well, that's obviously a waste.
That's all
of
I
my
wanted.
Time. Yeah. What else? Why else would I buy this?
But so Voidstream,
perfect.
Put us back into the thing. Voidstream it was very much like an experiment in like what the bridge between what things people actually use for their games and what games are is how I see it. I don't know how Cameron sees it, but it's like we have because so many people, especially in the Mothership community, the whole like the first thing all those books say: pull this book apart, rip it apart, shred it up, put it in your mouth. You know, it's just like they want you to they really are. Like, don't take this at face value, which is, you know, that's their rule zero or whatever, which is cool. But I don't know. I was like, we want to do both of those things. Now, Dog Eat Dog, on the other hand, is just a completely different beast altogether, because Cameron has already filmed the entire actual play. So that isn't to say that there isn't like collaborative world building happening in Voidstream, but it's kind of a different type, right? Where it's less like, what do you think should be in this room?
I'm so bummed that I didn't like just circle up with Jack for a month before we did the actual play, because the mechanics he's come up with for the book are just so deeply rad and would have played really well on screen. But so the AP is just like traditional Mothership with, you know, just like the world of Dog Eat Dog is there, the Redfern Kennel Club in the Vermont archipelago on Earth in 2197 or whatever. But the really nifty stuff, the on top of the world building, the mechanics that he's crafted show up after the fact of the AP. So
I would argue that I probably wouldn't have been able to get to the point where I made those mechanics, because what I specifically wanted to do was help people at the table be able to emulate a more narratively structured AP-like experience using Mothership. And also give them that in the framework of Mothership, 1 to 3 sessions, because that's how most people play Mothership. They don't play it for long stretches. So I don't even know if I would have gotten there, honestly, if we hadn't already, if I wasn't trying to figure out a way to translate what you had already done for the book, so that the book didn't just feel like a rehash of what we were seeing on screen, but rather an implementation of the things that we saw on screen, and a way to dive in to those things and empower players, because Cameron is, you know, he's a writer and a director and an editor, so and a warden. So he's got all these skill sets that help him understand narrative flow. So I obviously just wanted to make a mini game out of that idea. And that's
as we discussed, Jack loves rolling dice. And yeah, so, yes, of course, he had to make systems that let him roll some dice.
So, yeah, I'm sure the next time we do this, we probably will have a bit of a circle up before, when we're planning to do a AP slash book release.
Dog eat dogger.
More, yeah. Two dog, two eat, two dog. Two dog, two dog.
Yeah, two dog, two dog. It's it's just four dogs. That's the point.
But yeah, I mean, I like those. That's the fun of the collaboration. It's just like anything else. RPGs are collaborative, and yeah, I don't think I would have gotten the play mechanics if I wasn't specifically trying to help the player figure out how they could get that feeling of being a show.
Mm. I think it's interesting that it came the other way around.
Yeah,
right. That it was an AP with kind of this vibe in mind, and then the book is how do we get that vibe mechanized so that you can reproduce, control, and shift that vibe.
Right. Also, it's like not a non-traditional AP or like on location. It's a small. Yeah. It's a small cast. It's. I mean, you're selling yourself. It looks short, great. By
thanks, Matt.
The Jack sent everybody the trailer like when it came out, and I love the so we were talking earlier about APs, and like, you know, everybody's like, I can't listen to 4-hour things. My favorite AP is 3-hour audio only episodes that are very lightly edited for clarity. And I think the break is in audio and video, right? Like if you're doing an audio podcast, you lean into the strength of an audio file can be as long as we want it to be, and that's great. When you're doing a video podcast, especially an AP, you want it to look cool. And I think Dog Eat Dog the AP does exactly that, where it's just like what looks cooler than two people sat on, like Cameron says in the trailer, this is an AP you can win. And I feel like that is just so perfectly conveyed by here are two people sat opposite ends of the game board. Very board game, very, you know, it makes me think of those
prisoner's dilemma, if you will.
Now I don't know anything that happens in the AP. I'm so excited, but like there's so many vibes obviously from the trailer that just like in a room face to face, you know, Cameron in the middle as the warden, just like I'm so excited for what's going to happen, that it's a completely different animal. You know, it's a completely different beast than let's do a 4-hour sort of contemplative. Okay, we got this role. What does this role mean? How do we want to advance? How does this affect the world? Sort of thing. I think there's I think there's space for both. And like Cameron was saying, like, you wanted to do a sort of heavily polished pre-recorded AP as opposed to the Twitch streams in the same breath of, like, not that those are bad, but it's a different animal. It's a different beast. You have different focuses.
And column B exists. I haven't seen column A except in a very few examples. And
They're all corporately backed.
They're all because of the incredible amount of work it takes.
Right.
But just proving that, because I also feel like we're this close to Disney figuring it out and starting to snap up APs as you know, their own property. Disney as a generic intensifier for the company.
I'm actually surprised that, like, APs done by the publishing companies is not more popular already.
What's wild is Hasbro did a bunch of them and then put them on some random streaming service that you can't even find.
Hasbro do those? Is that
what is the, like, service?
I don't remember.
It's on, like, multiple.
They're not, like, Hasbro, but they're official. They're like official D&D.
Yeah. That's fair. It might not. Yeah.
They don't do anything in house anymore. Anyways, they
service everything. But because I remember when it was coming out, they were like, "Yeah, it's on Freevee and Plex or something like that." Yeah. And people were like, "Okay, when can I watch it?" Or it's on, like, Pluto, I think, as well. And they're like, "Yeah, it's on like rotation, like cable." And people are like, "But how do I watch it?" And they're like, "Yeah, you just tune into the channel and it'll be on when it's on." And they're like, "But how do I watch, like, if I wanted to watch episode one, how would I do that?" And they're like, "Well, Wednesday at 8:30.
Right.
You tune into the channel." And I remember thinking about this.
Are you talking about Encounter Party? Is that the one you're talking about?
I don't remember if that's what it's called.
I don't think so.
One of them is Kill Purple Worm Kill, because I remember that title very specifically.
Such a good title.
That's the Matt Lillard one, if I remember correctly.
Right.
I remember very specifically people being like, "No one is going to watch this because you've put it at a specific time frame," and it was supposed to come to VODs in some way. I don't know if that's the case. I think people forgot about it because of the way they did it. But
so many corporate decisions, I don't understand.
but getting to the point, like, I'm shocked that there's not more of a space for professional, and when I say professional, I mean, like, pre-recorded in a studio, you know, with a cast, all of this APs that aren't done by the publishing company. Because like, if I was Chaosium, if I was Free League, if I was Modiphius, you know, if I was any of these companies that have a marketing budget, and
especially, like, Free League, because Free League,
Free League,
because, like, one thing, like, Tuesday Night Games, obviously they're doing everything they can to help the third party community. Every time Cameron has something these days, they put it right there in their announcement channel. Like, you know, this whole crowdfunder was specifically built around the idea of, because it's one of these, like, group crowdfunders,
mm-hmm.
where it's like they wanted their rising ship to the rising tide of bring up all the ships, so they're literally doing everything they can do with the size they have. But like Free League, I mean, Free League's huge.
There's a new Alien RPG thing. Why isn't there a AP thing? Like, you know, you have the Alien license, you have the Blade Runner license. It's shocking to me that there's as much space in that as there is.
It's just
Cameron. Yeah, and so now it's a like question of how to, God, I hate him using this word, disrupt the, like, the current thinking on those things. But yeah, like edging, yeah, and just pop in and be like, because right, we touched on this earlier. It is ineffective to approach publishers and say, hey, because the money is not there the way that giant companies like that only, like, Free League and maybe, you know, like Monty Cook can handle. For one of those things, and both of those are like, what's the ROI on an AP? Because it's so hard to track. Like, it's you know, like, even a 3% conversion is miraculous, and that's not always the case. So, blah blah blah. This isn't a business podcast.
Business.
No, that's my other podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
But yeah, so, Doggy Dog. Let's talk about Doggy Dog the AP. For a moment, and then we'll launch into Doggy Dog the product, because I'm curious about both of them, because I think it's very interesting that they are not the same animal, to turn a phrase. What was kind of the impetus of Doggy Dog the AP, like the sort of the the brief
raison d'etre.
Yeah.
Truly, it's that, you know, it's been almost a year since the Panic Table produced something, and we've learned so much in that time. And yeah, because we're a boutique shop, it is, you know, we just don't have the resources that Dimension 20 has yet. And so we can't crank out sustainably high tier stuff on more than like a biannual basis. And this is only 4 episodes, but we knew that Mothership Month was coming out, and I was like, guys, we're gonna be standing center stage for just a minute here. And what we have done, it kind of happened via osmosis and also strategy, is just like, we're the Mothership guys now. So it would be curious if we had nothing to offer, I think, at Mothership. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, the world would go on, and I'd probably have a healthier marriage and like the home life. So we knew that it was time, and I decided to do so. I did 2 things. I came to Failure Island, my company, and talked to my partners and was like, hey, we can do this again. I want to hop in front of the bus and say, like, we can also not do this right away because of how much resources it requires. And instead, we all agreed to make something there. By point of reference, like, as we said, Unaccompanied Minors took about 6 months to edit, and that was 10 episodes. We knew we were doing 4, and in my hubris, I was like, we'll have 4 episodes to watch in 1 month prior to Mothership Month, as well as... Because as soon as I knew we were doing the AP, I think I reached out to Jack immediately thereafter, and was like, hey man, I think we're spinning up the old engine again. And so we had started to talk about what that could mean as we were shooting the AP. But so we made it knowing that the dance floor was relatively empty, other than there's some cool, like, Nobody Wake the Bugbears out there. They're an Australian joint that does audio only type stuff with some really rad overlays. But very apples and oranges as far as like what our offerings are, right? Yeah, why we knew we had captive eyeballs. We've done a really good job at kind of cornering the market on Mothership material. So why not?
So how was it? I meant to ask this earlier. How was working with the Tuesday night crew? How was their reception after the first season of Panic Table?
Right. So we popped out of the woods a year ago and some change, and I made a video where I was like, hi, you know, rather than like sending just an email, I was like, we're a video company, let's make an introduction video.
You sent them one of those old dating site like VHS tapes.
Honestly, kinda, yeah. I have it around here somewhere. I'll show you sometime. It's really cute. I think the next time I do something, we should set it up even more throwbacky, just to capture that analog horror that we've really come to embody. But yeah, I was like, hello, here's our pedigree, here's what we do, and we'd like to make an actual play show. So we just kind of want to explore what that means, or at the very least have your blessing for that. Because at the time,
you reached out to them in the first place. Pre-production.
Well, right. What I didn't want to do was make a show and then have them be like, absolutely not, you know, after it came out. And so plus the Panic Table, the name comes from the Mothership core rule set. Like, it's what you roll on to see what they panic. And the name was just too perfect, because I knew we wanted to go indie horror and have a name that wasn't too confined to Mothership, but still germane to the space. It's so funny because space is double entendre there. But
he's so smart.
Shaking my head.
Writer, director.
So we reached out, and they were instantly charmed by my feminine good looks, and we just had a conversation, and like, because one of the things was like, do you want this to be your show? And they weren't in a place where that was possible resource wise, or even like, we had also just met, so they weren't ready to just like hop in bed.
Here's whatever. Yeah.
Like, imagine watching one of those tapes and being like, it's go time, let's get married.
Right.
So,
signed it.
Yeah.
Right. So they were like, well, you know, full blessings. Like, thanks for being so interested. Like, we also, they were pleased because notoriously they had their fulfillment occurred during the global shipping crisis. And so,
yes.
Like, it was ready to ship a year before it ever hit desks and tables because of, you know, that ship that was literally blocking the canal. A world away. And so it was fraught with peril, and they were dying for content to be like, hey, we know all of you backed this, because they made like 1.6 million on Kickstarter. Yeah, or something like
they
that
did. They did a hell of a Kickstarter.
They did, yeah. And so people were chomping at the bit, but that was 3 years ago at that point. So for them to be able to be like, look, shiny. They really were thankful for the opportunity to have us briefly distract from shipping woes, and so yeah, it was just exciting to get together there. Did that answer that question? I think it did.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. they're very cool people. I think it's
super supportive.
The only thing they are ever are they are stewards of their of the thing that they've made. So they do care enough to not just let anything be attached to the brand.
Sure.
Huge advocates of fighting like the shovelware you see on TTRPG. I mean, DriveThruRPG with the like a lot of the like AI gen, dime a dozen stuff. They have employees whose whole job is just to go in and like allow or deny licenses and then take action when somebody is using their imprint incorrectly, because they have a very very reasonable third party license. So,
and they do, but it is more involved than like Karen or whatever, where it's like, or basically the you know, you'll
call it, where it's
put,
just like
put,
yeah,
put everything into the Creative Commons more or less, and it's like just don't be racist or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They do have like an approval process for the stuff, which I think is kind of cool. I like the democracy of the other thing, but I do also like that it makes it feel like you're a little bit more part of it, as opposed to just being like, I made a thing over here.
Right.
And you see the breadth of their selections too. Like on one end you have like the most punk rock rattiest zines, and on the other hand you have like really polished stuff, and everybody's welcome. It's more like that they're examining the intent and the energy put behind it, not the content itself.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, and they seem really, really tuned in. And that's why like there's so many cool products like directly on their website, which is a thing that I love.
Sure.
That like, you know, Goodman Games does for DCC stuff all the time. Like it's great to just go to the place and see all of the cool shit.
Jack, our books are going to be on the website. How cool is that?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Did I not tell you this?
No.
Hell yeah. Oh yeah.
SOS and Dog Eat Dog are going to be on there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, dope. Okay.
And see, and that's what I mean. Just as a normie who's like, oh, I like Mothership. I wonder what there is for Mothership. And then it's boom. It's right there. I don't have to go search an itch tag. I don't have to go try to find a hashtag on a social media page or whatever. And like you said, Mothership Month is such a rad fucking idea to me that I don't think I've ever seen anyone do. Like, I think Goodman did something similar in that, you know, they do a really good job of like boosting crowdfundings for DCC stuff. But to have the entire like thing be like, we're doing a new book, that's cool. Here's all this other cool shit that people have made. That like, you know, putting all of that together and in front of people directly and giving them a reason to back other projects, to get involved with other things, to build this sort of library of stuff. I think it's just a rad move by a publisher.
Yeah, they're very cool.
It's a complete opposite idea of some other companies who we won't name here. Cameron has to leave us, but I want to give him a chance to talk up all of his stuff like we haven't already. All of the links to everything will be in the show notes. Cameron, go ahead. Tell us all your good stuff. Tell us where all of your wonderful things are.
Matt, please don't post that stuff. I said, please, Matt. My mom is going to listen to this and she's going to know. So, Matt, I'm just... like, I could plug my links. Please, Matt. I'm a grown man. I'm 38 years old. Please. Don't post that stuff. Also, thank you for listening. Thanks for having me here. This is really exciting. And check out The Panic Table. It is available wherever the Google search The Panic Table will take you. Unless it gets confused with The Picnic Table, which is frequently. So look out for that. But we are overhauling our website, www.thepanictable.com. Right now, if you look at it, it has been updated as of February 2024. So it is confused and lost, but in a couple months, it's going to be gorgeous. I'm excited about that. I'm thrilled to be working with Jack Panic as we further the ambitions of the Panic Institute together and in the darkness bind them. This has been Cameron Strip Matter signing off.
Cameron, thank you so much for being here, buddy. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for everything.
So Dog Eat Dog, the book, the product.
Sure. It's interesting because So, like, full disclosure, I haven't seen all the AP either. I've only seen a handful of things because he doesn't have it all cut together. So most of the things I know about it are just conversations we've had about it. And then, like, a little, just a handful of things that I've gotten to see, some behind-the-scenes stuff.
Really like that. I really love that idea. And I know it was completely accidental, but, man, is that such an interesting concept to me.
Yeah, I honestly prefer it. I'm down to any form of collaboration. I'm down to, like, if he had come, this is how I want this thing. I want it to be this way. And I have these beats. And invariably, it still will be that, right? There will still be things that are like, I know that there are some ideas that I have that he's like, well, that doesn't quite fit the tone. And we've been some moments where I've been, okay, well, you know, the tone of the show can't be the tone of the book because the book is, once again, it's a resource as well as a narrative, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you have to have more things than would be in the show. And invariably we agree, but it's just interesting. It's an interesting collaborative process. And I really like the honestly being added, like, I'll tell you, we talk enough. We're real life friends. Real life internet friends. Those are all my only friends are internet friends now. But you talk enough, you know that I don't really, I like lore.
Mm-hmm.
In the context of playing a game.
Right.
So
right.
I like learning, like the lore to me is only really interesting when we're discovering it together. I only ever want enough stuff that makes it interesting enough for us to be in the space together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know how I write. So I like the implication of lore more than I care about. And whereas like Cameron's like a screenwriter, right? Like he's written scripts. So that's lore. For me, it's perfect because it's like, okay, well, tell me how faster than light travel works in your world, and tell me mm-hmm. how these dog creatures are made. And I'm going to take those ideas and I'm going to expand upon them, and we're going to. Kind of, we'll probably have to twist some of them because, once again, I'm very much of the mindset that the AP and the game should have enough overlap that you feel the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you watch the AP, it's an instant shorthand for you when you're running the game. I think that's the biggest asset there, right? Like, if you had a bunch of people who watched, it's four episodes long, watch all four episodes, and they go, let's play that. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
so cool. All of a sudden, we don't have to worry about what the place looks like or like how the attitude of the vibe is like on screen. Which I mean, how many modules, how many adventures have you bought that like that's baked in?
You can do the thing that my partner loves, which is like we watch someone play a video game on YouTube, and 10 minutes into the video, she pauses and goes, "I don't want to watch this anymore because I want to play this."
I'm going to play this. Yeah, yeah,
and like, and that's great.
And also, it serves that itch. It's like, I don't watch a ton of APs because I'll watch for about 30 minutes, and then I'm like, I'm writing stuff. You know, I've moved away. So I think it really is the best of both worlds. Also, it's just, like I was saying earlier, the idea of trying to implement... Because when he gave the project to me, it was already... Dog Eat Dog is this. The game is a campaign setting. And when he said it's a campaign setting, I felt differently than I did... When we were like, you know, VoiceStream is a toolkit with an adventure site,
mm-hmm.
you know, and their framework, we put some framework in there very much in line with the way Mosh supplements are written. You know, here's a setup, here's some outcomes, and then go ham. But what I wanted with this was, like I was saying earlier, a way to kind of build in the feeling of a long form of prison escape media. You know what I mean? Like, which is a very specific. And that sounded really exciting to me. And like most things, it just came out of Kismet. I was making stuff for the backer kit page, and I was like, "Well, I need a map. I want to, the Void Stream backer kit did not have as much. It didn't have product mockups." Mm-hmm. And product mock-ups sell things. I mean, that's just and for good reason. Like I see what it looks like. I'm excited about that. That looks cool.
So I see that. I will give money for that.
So for this, it's like, okay, well, basically all I'm doing is I'm writing some parts of the book that are going to be there anyways, and monsters and things or horrors, as they're called in Mothership, horrors and NPCs and stuff like that. And
the other big upside of working in the confines of an actual play is that they have artists and stuff on hand. So, like, the, you know, the concept art and, like, the cover art and, like, the map is that 3D wire map that I shared that's, like...
It looks so good.
And, like, a Virtual Boy, I think it was what Cameron told his design guy, Joel. I need to remember this guy's name because, obviously, I owe him my second-born child. So I screen-grabbed that wireframe at an angle. I made a map, and then I filled in a bunch of, like, placeholder text. But, you know me, I like making tiny games and stuff. It wasn't just Loris Ipsum. Mm-hmm. I was basically being like, you know, it's only this big, and it's this way. You can't really see it on, you can't use my hands on a podcast, but it's not very big. I didn't, like, make a big screen grab of it. But on the map, I put in the stealth system. Because we've all kind of been poking fun at Mosh with the Quinn's review, you know, mm-hmm, of stealth. Mm-hmm. And I put that there kind of as a joke, but also, like, I put that, and then I put this, like, table that said sit, stay, and play dead. And I was like, well, we have to figure out what that mechanic is. So, mm-hmm, you know, it's like the idea of there being a sit, stay, and play dead to thematically tie the dog stuff back in was so interesting to me. And then I already wanted to figure out the difference between writing an adventure and writing a campaign setting.
Mm-hmm.
An adventure site's a building with some stuff in it. And a campaign setting is an adventure site with people and stuff in it, but then there is a context that it's supposed to be played away. There is a, mm-hmm, a way to play it. And that is really what I wanted to emulate. I wanted to be like, okay. And then I just drew inspiration from the actual play. It's like, okay, well, how do we... You know, fundamentally, they'll be very different. They're going to be very different experiences because, like he said, we did it the other way around. But I think that's kind of fun because what I wanted to do is figure out, like I said, a way to make it so that you feel like you're getting that cinematic experience in Mothership, which is a deadly game, not set up for long-term play, even though it has rules for it. You have to be very clever, and mm-hmm, you have to have a very, like, play style matters so much. So basically, I wanted to take out a little more guide rails for play style so that you could have, because in great Prison Break stuff, you got to have the scene where, you know, we're talking about, like, the Great Escape, right? He's digging and he's got the mattress covering up the hole. And
right.
He's got
right.
a dummy in the mattress. Those beats can't happen back to back in the same scene, and you actually have to have setups for those reveals, and you have to, like, how are we going to create the space in Mothership to have those moments where they don't just feel like we've said we're doing that, which is not a problem. I love a fiction forward game where we just say a thing happens, but this is an OSR game, you know, and I love mechanics, so I just really wanted a system that would also, I'm just, like, gaga right now for time as a resource, using time. It's just something that I'm really interested in figuring out, looking at from, like, different angles.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of was perfect because the idea is that, like, a prison break is not something that happens overnight. If we just did the night where we break out of prison, that would be fun. But
that's not a different thing.
That's not a prison break. That's an action scene in a prison break. That is,
yeah.
That is. And I want that moment, but I want it to be something that builds to it. I want it to be like, so that when you're actually on the run and the dogs are chasing you at this mysterious prison ranch where there are no guards, just dogs, that moment means something, and it feels like something. And I also wanted to be able to implement things like getting dirt on your NPCs, obtaining leverage, which is a gameplay mechanic term. Like, leverage allows you to access your stay mechanic, and stay mechanic is how you pull off the cool little bits of narratively, kind of interesting meetups in the dark, or slipping people a shiv in the shower, that kind of thing, and allow the players to have more control over the narrative. In a sense, building support not just for the warden, but for the players. So that, I think it's easier. Right? I know you would agree. Mm-hmm. It's easier when the players have ownership over the world. But in order for that to all work, you have to build a framework so that they're not all just bumping around.
Right, right. And it's almost like you're having to, you want an outcome to occur, and so now you have to design the mechanics that allow the players and the wardens to get to and activate those outcomes.
Mechanics matter. So you could do it the other way, but that's all dependent on playstyle and execution, and that's how an AP works. That's why he doesn't need he didn't need these mechanics for this, because how the drama would be structured is already set up in the scenario, you know, and their expertise. But for the average person, so that was just interesting to me too, like to think about the difference for a game like Mothership, the difference between an adventure site and what a campaign means. And to me, a campaign should be more than just here's a couple of adventure sites strung together. Not that there's anything wrong with that. For me, it's my philosophy of design.
It's how you want to build it.
Yeah, it's how I want to build it.
It's like we talked about earlier. There's no moralistically good way. Yeah, there's just the way that you like.
It's just the way. And for me, it should be more than just here's a couple cool locations and here's a couple cool people and cool monsters. It needs all of those things. But what are we trying? What's the game feel? What are we trying to like feel like when we're playing this game? And what tropes are we trying to emulate? And how do we get those tropes? So it should be really interesting. Also, we wanted to add in some stuff that will allow for the Mothership Wages of Sin book, which is the centerpiece of this. Not that they required this at all. They didn't. Sean and the gang did not say that these things had to correlate to their.
But you're like, hey, there's a thing coming. Let's leave space for it.
Exactly. But I did want there to be like, how do I get bounty hunters in here? And then the gameplay loop just came to me. It's just all about players getting to decide when the fiction ends, because Mothership is a conversation, and it's a deadly conversation. And the longer you have the conversation, the more likely you are to have to roll dice. And dice are potentially lethal, but it's a fun game because there need to be lots of opportunities to roll dice, but the dice are minefields, right?
Right. So it's like I said earlier, like the reason Mothership is an OSR game is because you're spending your resources to affect the fiction, and those resources are your health. Are your equipment. Those resources are your saves.
Exactly.
And you're deciding how much of these resources do I want to invest in the ways that I want to push the narrative.
Exactly. So, the gameplay loop just kind of came out of that, and it was like, okay, so the players can affect time. The players are going to need to follow the routines of NPCs. They're going to need to get leverage. They're going to need to. There's all these bits and pieces, and then after they've moved, but if they, if we give them the power to stop the narrative, like okay, we've done the things we want to do today. We've done the objectives. We're going to stop the narrative. What's to stop them from just doing that and taking them out of the fiction? And then there's no danger, right? Mm-hmm. So, depending on what alert status the prison's at, they have X amount of turns before that clock gets filled up and an escalation event happens. So they can pause the fiction, they can stop those things, they can stay in the fiction and play in those scenes, meet up with the guard after hours, hook up with an inmate in the shower, whatever that beat is that they're trying to do for information or whatever. But after so many times, something happens, and that thing could be something the warden wants. It could be something narrative, or it can just be a roll table. And I wanted there to be like, oh, how cool would it be if you're in the middle of this prison break campaign, and there's this big, bad, scary, weird prison where there's all these dogs and like mad scientists and all this weird stuff under the surface. And then on the second or third session of your 5-session campaign, a bounty hunter shows up because you're not supposed to be here.
Right.
And so we can introduce a third faction through that system too, right? It doesn't just have to be more guards, more dog monsters. Mm-hmm. It can be other factions, other prisoners. Escalation doesn't have to mean that it becomes a combat zone. It just means that it's something in the tension, something there. And that's for the warden, because I like systems that make it fun for the GM to play the game. And not just feel like they're just getting tools and toys for the players,
right? I really like the idea that that escalation doesn't just mean instead of 3 guards, there's 5 guards. Like, oh no, it's like no, there's a whole other thing happening.
Yeah.
Like a completely third thing comes in and wrecks this routine that you thought was happening.
It's 100% based on my playthrough experience with Citizen Sleeper that I just had. where it's just like time is a management.
That's such a good game. Everyone should play Citizen Sleeper.
But figuring out where you're going to spend your energy, having objectives, and knowing which objectives have timers on them. So it'll have a very broken down, very simple system. And then there will basically be a prison turn, right? There'll just be a turn where we see where all the things move. And on our map, you can see where all the NPCs go here. And on the next day, Jim Bob, the janitor, is in the wet kennel. And that would be the time to buy the drugs off of him, whatever the scenario is. I don't know if I really answered the question, but I think that is like the crux of the difference between the two things and why I think that they deserve each other,
mm-hmm.
and empower each other. I want someone to, if their entrance is the book, to be surprised and intrigued by what they get from the actual play, because we didn't just take everything bit for bit. Now, all the main people, I mean, the bad guys and all those, they're in there, right?
Right.
But the conflict presented in the AP is very specifically about one person who's there, for reasons, and then an android that's there. And in Cameron's setting, androids are not just robots. There are, like, yeah, android robots.
Androids in the Panic Table universe are really neat.
They're inspired by The Leftovers. It's like a bunch of people disappeared, and so companies cloned all of those people, and they just became second class citizens as a result, because everyone's like, look at these weird copies of my dead daughter or whatever. Mm-hmm. So an android wouldn't go to prison. So it's just a very interesting setup in the AP. So I just wanted them to be as close to possible in vibe and aesthetic and on the stuff that matters, and then have enough of an experience that they are companions to each other in a really holistic way, and not just in a we made a thing you could, like, you can play.
Right, we made a thing you can play. Like, yeah. We made this thing, and then we played it, and you can play this too.
Yeah, which is, that's in there.
Yeah, it's more than that. There's more, and that's kind of, that's the thing. This is gonna feel weird to say to a microphone. I have a lot of feelings around the push to make RPGs, TTRPGs specifically, mm-hmm. Like more APable, like yeah. more able to be done on an actual play, because, and there's a lot of caveats with this, obviously. Sure, this isn't like some weird hot take where I'm like, AP suck or anything. It's I think when you, like we mentioned in the far, far back, you know, TTRPGs are anthropology. There's a difference between the game in the book versus the game at the table versus whatever. And I'm interested in the ways that you have to design a game, or not you have to, but if you design a game mm-hmm. to function well as an AP, are you designing a game or are you designing a framework for a show?
Yeah.
Like if you're designing it for an AP, are you designing a game or are you designing a framework for actors?
Yeah.
And how does those, when does it not become actual play when it's a game design? And
who's that useful for? I mean,
like, right. And that's the other thing. Yeah, that's what I was going to say about Dog Eat Dog. The thing is, you know, are APs for players? Are APs for people who run games? Like, mm-hmm. and so if you make a game that's focused on APs, like, who's that? Like, do you release that game? Like, is that a product that you release when it's a thing that's just designed to help tell a narrative?
100%.
And so, like, you know, like I said, it's a lot of weird, complicated feelings that don't have an end.
Yeah, and there are lots of good answers to that. You know, there are arguments. I could see arguments both sides. I know that Sadie is working on a game right. that is meant to elevate to meet the AP with gameplay. So mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's, obviously it's a very nuanced
right.
situation, but that's 100% where I was coming from with all of this. That, like, we would never succeed trying to emulate that thing one to one. Well, we might succeed. It might be fine, but
right,
would that be interesting? And then in a system like Mothership, where the majority of the content is third party content, right? Like, they have some official, this, the Wages of Sin is their first official thing they put out since the box set. You know, it's their only hardcover there.
Gosh, that is wild to think, yeah. Because because so much of the stuff that ships with the box set that isn't the rules is someone else.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and they really do. They are a community-focused gaming group, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they mm-hmm. understand that. But, so I look at the other... Not to say I've read a lot of all of them. I've read a bunch. I've skimmed more than I've read. So I'm not saying that I have, like, some sort of, like, lexicon of knowledge of what exists in Mothership. But I do know that from what I've seen and what I like and from the people that I, like, really, like, lone archivists and the people that I really, like, that inspire me, they all bring something interesting to that module that adds to the overall flavor of Mothership and makes some of those, like... I won't say holes because that sounds like they're underdeveloped, but intentionalities. Sure. Mothership is a game that is built with space in it so that you can, the space in the system so that you can, so that those holes can be filled by, I mean, you can look at the Warden's Guide. That's exactly what, like, that was the design intent, was that this game is supposed to be able to be whatever.
I need to read that.
Well, you do.
I really need to.
It is one of the best pieces of holistically the best pieces of just running games. It's very useful for Mothership, but I mean, like, just the whole page about safety tools is such a matter of fact. Like, it basically just breaks it down and, like, what if I invited you to my house for dinner and I mm-hmm. didn't think about what you like to eat.
Right. I was just like, come to dinner. What are we eating?
Food. I'm the cook, and I get to decide.
Jack, we've been friends for 20 years. You don't think I know what you like to eat? You come and it'll be great.
Exactly. But yeah, I think that the exciting thing about making things for Mothership is, like, okay, we're going to make a thing. Yeah, it's going to have a vibe that's its own thing. It's going to have its art that's its own thing. The story will be its own thing. But what's that extra sauce that will make it fit into the library of Mothership games? Not so that it will be more, like, marketable, because obviously I'm not very good at making money off of my stuff since I just mostly put it all out for free. but what will make it feel like it's earned its place in the rotation of people's games?
What's the bit of it that's going to grab you that makes it just, like, not just a book?
So, like, when I said I made a stealth system, I didn't make a stealth system for Mothership. I made a stealth system for my campaign setting, because in prison break fiction, you have to have moments where the characters sneak.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's written in the book is, of course, it's a conversation. And what I don't want is a bunch of conversations that slow down the narrative. So basically, I want a mechanic there so that we know exactly how to move about doing those things. And it's all related to time. So, like, it's a very simple system. It's basically, you spend a lot of time sneaking. There's no risk of you getting caught. We don't even have to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. You have the ability to not be in your cell. Well, this is like a free range, like, rehabilitation prison, right? People.
Yeah, it's not. It's not a supermax sort of thing.
They do have some cells and stuff, but that's a later in the game kind of thing. But yeah, so you spend a lot of time, and when you get to where you want to go, you sit. So that ends the fiction. So you can't do anything else in that time, but you get where you go and you do the thing, right? Or incremental of that, you do it a little bit faster, and there is a risk of being seen by XYZ. You do it as fast as possible. It's less of a sneaking table, and it is just a how do you move from one area to the other, and in relation to, like, stealth. So it's like, I wasn't sitting there like, oh, I'm going to make a stealth system because that's the thing that they didn't have. Right. It's like, well, I'm going to make a system because I know what fiction I'm trying to emulate, and I know that I need to give tools to support that fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't suggest taking the thing that I've made and trying to put it into Dead Planet, because it's not going to make sense. It's not going to work. I didn't make a system. I made a system for my campaign, which is, I think, makes it feel more special.
I think it's interesting, like you said, like, what's the secret sauce, right? What's the thing that's in this that makes it a little different, that makes mm-hmm. you want to play this, or that pulls you into the fiction of that you're trying to present?
Yeah. Because if you are asking people to give you your time and money, which you're most certainly asking people to give us, their money, because this is the only way right now. This is the only, doing these Kickstarters and like producing content and getting it out is the only way I get to do this full time, is to just be a workhorse at it, you know, and then like beg for money. But
which makes me happy because I like my friends getting paid for the things that they do.
It's nice to be able to pay rent. Yeah, but it's like, how do you get people to commit their time, their energy, and their money? And, you know, not just be giving, you know, like shovelware, like Cameron said earlier, like the reason, right. The reason they're so discriminatory, positive, affectionately, towards third party stuff is they just want to make sure that the stuff that's getting put out there is good for the audience. It's not about gatekeeping their brand. It's about gatekeeping player experience. They want to make sure that if you're getting something that's for Mothership, that it adds to your experience and that it gives a different experience. And I think that's really cool. And that got me so excited to write this. Like, I was just like, oh, this is what a fun, I love building systems. And all the other stuff I'll love to build too, you know, monsters and the, you know, how, you know, I also love the, I wrote this character, Jake, they do this thing. And in the show, they have these abilities. And then I get to go say, oh, well, how do we make those things work logistically in the game? And how do we do them in, you know, how do we do them in a way that's slightly kind of fresh? Mm-hmm. How do we do them that doesn't just use the systems? Not that I'm trying to like reinvent the wheel every time, obviously, but making, you know, for instance, the Mothership monster design, sorry, horror design, is centered around basically a line of stats and then a wall of text. But that's not how I write things, right?
Right.
I write mechanics, and the mechanics are supposed to give you the flavor. And I'm in a unique position now where Cameron actually is going to have that wall of text. You know, it's like, we're going to have those things. We'll have all this stuff, but...
The two of you working together is a really fantastic pairing.
Yeah,
the two of you just from my brief involvement with Panic Table stuff, I really feel like the two of you overlapping just really like cover each other, but also let your strengths really shine through.
Yeah, well, now that Cameron isn't here, I can say that I think the dude is super smart. I think that
now that he's not here, I can say all the nice things about him.
Well, because I'll go defensive if I try to compliment him in public.
That's true. But,
not defensive, deflective. No, he's got all these talents and these abilities and these things that I just don't have. And vice versa. I mean, we both you want to work with people that compliment you and build and help build up those things. And I wouldn't have had any. This, I'm not a genius. I do need, like, I am in TTRPGs design because I need the collaboration. That's my favorite part of RPGs. Is I'm fine at writing stuff on my own if I have to sit here, but I'm way better at creating things during the game when my players are giving me their stuff, and they have their ideas, and they want their things, and they're pitching stuff, and we're trying to see how that works, and we're doing that tennis game back and forth. That's where the magic is, and that's why I'm the best. That's why I make the stuff I'm most proud of, you know.
So God, that's such a good analogy. Now that you say that, like TTRPGs are a tennis game, because if me, who is not very good at tennis, played against, I don't know, a good tennis player, you know, like grandmaster tennis player, that match is going to be dog shit because he's going to wipe the floor with me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's when you have players who are equally matched is when the match is exciting. It's when you're engaged.
Yeah. That's exactly
that's when you're engaged. When both sides are really giving it and they're sending and receiving. And that's when you're engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, now, God, you say that, and I feel like it's one of those things that feels like it's...
Well, and the nice thing about TTRPGs versus tennis is that skill level matters so much less than the difference between a professional tennis match and playing with your friends.
Right.
Is professional tennis is to an end, whereas playing with your friends is all about getting to hit the ball.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
It's the engagement. I say a thing and you say a thing and I say a thing and you say a thing.
And it's less about any... I mean, playing games is... Especially TTRPGs, because it's so rare that you have... even in the semi-competitive RPGs or whatever. It's still about the playing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is my whole, like, design thing. Like, the reason I like games... And I just like play. I think play is one of the most important parts of being human. And I think that we have a society that worships aspects of play, but only the aspects that kind of serve the capitalist beast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like play, exploration through play, learning happens when we're having fun. Especially now that I feel vindicated. Now I have a small child, because watching a child learn, children learn, and this is backed by science, children learn better when they're playing than any other avenue.
Right.
If it's a game, if it's fun, that shit sticks to their brain. If I sat down, my kid's 3, he can count to 16.
That's pretty good.
And if I had just sat down and be like, we're going to learn how to count to 10, that repetition's helpful. I do that with him, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But
reinforcement.
But when
you wouldn't just take him and be like, okay, we're gonna learn to count. One.
Exactly. Yes. One. Two.
Say one.
But when it's about him trying to sing a song about fish, right? Then the fish coming along, one fish, two fish, and that just I didn't have to tell him to learn to count those numbers.
Right. Because it's right in there.
It's just right in there. So and we still do that as adults at all levels of like understanding. So like it is I get overly sentimental about how important I think play is.
Well, I feel very similar. You know, we talked earlier about like in short, chronically online TTRPG people, of which I'm one. Listen, if I'm
yeah, me too.
I'm saying that word, and I know exactly who I am.
Too. Yeah,
and I think there's a gap of play with a lot of a lot of those people, again myself included, where there's a lot of theory, there's a lot of concepts, there's a lot of ideas, that you know, there's a lot of stuff thrown back and forth of like, this is how this should work and this is da 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 da.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people would be more accepting to those ideas if they were enacted in play. Mm-hmm. Right, if it wasn't, here's a person on social media telling you da 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 da, like you said, like emulating good behavior is so important. If it's a thing that I would love for APs to do, like APs at all levels of all types, had some sort of visible public session zero,
mm-hmm.
right? Some sort of visible public discussion of safety tools. I don't want mm-hmm. people to recount all of their trauma, all of their lines.
But modeling
that behavior, yeah. Having that discussion visible publicly as part of that whole campaign mm-hmm. conversation, mm-hmm. I think would do so much good 100%. For the community, because it's not someone yelling at you on social media, in which so many people are already very defensive about.
Mm-hmm.
It is Brendan Lee Mulligan saying, hey, you know what's great? Is if sometimes when you're playing the game and you're not really vibing with what's happening, you just take a second and you say, hey guys, can we take a breath? 100%. Like, you know, and I think just emulate, and that's part of coming back to, like I said, my like complex ball of feelings around actual plays and more mm-hmm. production-based actual plays than mm-hmm. quote unquote real actual plays. I think it's very funny the amount of time and effort that is spent on how to play the games.
Yeah.
As opposed to just playing the games. And this mm-hmm. isn't at anyone in particular.
I get with you. It's just trends you're seeing.
Right. It's the same thing in video games. Like not to get on a whole other tangent, at the very least, keep it on the genre that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why, circling back, this is the part that I'm good at, right? We come back to the tangent, I'm really good at pulling it back in.
That's, yeah.
Part of why I love Jack's stuff on TikTok, why I love the Dungeon Club stuff, is so many times I'll be honest. I'm on the toilet. I'm on TikTok. One of Jack's posts will come up, and I immediately have an idea of what I want to do with this thing, or have a scene in my head of this thing that you just that I just read that you wrote. Or, oh man, you could do this campaign like the Four Swords of the Apocalypse, like you said. Like, oh, we could do this campaign. They're warring kingdoms, and what is in a tomb, and all this. It's just so immediately evocative in a way that I think is like incredibly skillful in a TikTok. You know what I mean? Some people have trouble doing that in a whole book. And I think like your effort to shave it down to something that's so immediately consumable.
I'm still trying to, like, I have an audience there. I'm lucky to have people that gave a toot about what I was doing. And I want to engage them in a way that I think is playful, that is engaging in play, which is why I immediately started doing system agnostic stuff, even though if I just kind of buckled down and made like 5e third party stuff, I could probably be making a bit more money, at least on my Patreon, right? But that's not what I want to design. And also leaving those gaps, forcing the person who's reading it to think about how they would use it is how that is the play. Mm-hmm. That's the game. The game right. is, for me, is I'm going to make something, and I'm going to say, this is how I think I would use it. I'm going to bullet it down to its bullet points. Here are some implementations, and then I want to... That's the fun part. The fun part is mm-hmm. knowing that it's not mine once you read it. And people all the time, oh, can I use this? It's like, well, duh. Obviously, you don't know how things work. You can just take things and use them. But also, like, please, like, that is the whole point. I am not making anything I make. I don't make because I think that I'm good at it. I make it because, or like that it's special. I make it because it's fun. Like it's right. fun for me, and I want the that is what you're describing to me is play. It's like all those posts I make are like one post RPGs trying to gamify the number of likes. Like that sword I made.
Oh, those are so good. I love those so much.
And I just like the idea of pushing the medium and like being like, at some point I'll get back to my second secret account. That's a like weird point and click thing where but just using the medium the way it is. And honestly, like this doggy dog stuff is kind of the same thing. It's like, well, I'm a rare opportunity to have something I'm going to make, have eyes on it. And mm-hmm. it's going to have a companion thing that I had nothing to do with. That's all fun. Those are all fun. Mm-hmm. It's all fun.
Yeah. So. And what I think is cool, another thing about them being separate, I'm just so into the idea of them existing temporally separate. Mm-hmm. You know, almost like, okay, here's a prompt. I give the prompt to Cameron, I give the prompt to you. You write a book, he writes an AP. Mm-hmm. And the idea that they could, even from the same germ,
mm-hmm.
end up being so totally separate is such a cool idea.
Well, that's games.
Yeah.
You know,
like you could watch AP and you could be like, I've got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Boom. I'm going to write this completely different thing
mm-hmm.
because of this AP that is tangentially related to the book that you already wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good. I fucking love TTRPGs.
I do too. It's so hard to explain until you've done it, and then even once you've done it, meaning like played one, been part of it, even once you've done it, realizing that you only really scratched the surface of it, because like I talk a lot, like, you know, obviously we this game, that game, I like this game, that game, but like my knowledge of games compared to like some of our mutuals, just like I don't know.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
I don't know nothing, you know what I mean? But that's
I've only
not...
read one Jenna Moran game.
Yeah, yeah. I've
oh well.
I'm skimming through one. But that's the fun of it is that it's not. There is no litmus test. It's not a skill. It's not about that. But it is the once you're like, oh, there's so much more underneath.
Right. Like
there's so many ways to
play
games, and they can be so many different ways. Yeah. It's just it is a.
I think that's such a great moment.
And they're just ideas. You know, like, yeah, like my stuff is resonates because I have an interesting art style and I've hit a niche or whatever, but it's no different than anyone else's ideas, and technology just puts us in a place where I can share those things easily, and that's very cool, and I love that. But anyone can do it, you know? Anybody can do it. And my thing I tell people all the time is, like, the only reason I have followers on there is not necessarily because, I mean, I am not the type of person to say my content is this or that. I only put out things that I think are fun. So I do like my content, obviously. I do like the things that I write because I think they're fun. I would put them out, but I don't think they're fun. But the only difference between me and like someone else who's maybe not getting that exposure or not doing the things, they just haven't put it out there.
Right.
So it's like I talk to, especially like our design mutuals or whatever. It's like anytime I can convince somebody maybe to be less safe, less precious with their stuff. Thing.
What's the idea you have? Do that idea.
And put it out there. And put it out there in whatever form you can. Don't spend 5 years writing a book if you're not going to spend 5 years sharing that with people so that they can be excited about it. Because you're just going to have a very nice manuscript that no one will see because you never did the thing, you know.
Yeah, and there's so much to be learned in the doing.
Yeah,
you know, like Cameron said at the beginning, and I've, you know, I've shared with doing this podcast, like there's so much I learned about how to do this thing once I finally said, okay, I'm gonna go do this thing.
100%. I'm a much better writer now, a year later, after pumping out all those things. I won't say I'm embarrassed by any of it, but I stylistically, as I'm in the process of it, once this Kickstarter is done, we will be in the process of getting, timeline wise, it's like, okay, well, we're gonna get the PDFs done as soon as possible so we can get those people's hands. We're gonna get the product to people by the end of next year. That's the projected timeline. But in the meantime, this is how I live. So I'm going to be doing a personal Relics remastered, like my, all of my TikTok stuff. I'll do another PDF book.
Hell yeah.
In February, maybe with Zine Quest or whatever. Also, my guys, my buddies, Sean and Nick, who are part of Dungeon Club Games. I guess I'm like Dungeon Club, but Dungeon Club Games is us. It's branding is weird because I don't go by Dungeon Club. I don't go by Dungeon Club, but Dungeon Club is what people know me as, so I am Dungeon Club, but Dungeon Club Games is us,
that fun thing.
But we're so I'm gonna be putting that together, and then they're working on a game that I'm gonna basically I guess I'm like creative director, right? So like they're writing a game, and I'll come in and be like, okay, here's what I like about this, this is what I think would be a tweak, and then I'm going to take the visuals and stuff they give me and then match the aesthetic of the brand and like put my own spit shine on it or whatever. They're making a game called Laser Chimps, which I'm really, really excited about.
All right.
It's an Eat the Reich hack.
Okay.
Where you play as a group of, like in the same vein of pre-generated stats. Everyone plays as an enhanced chimpanzee, or I think one of them is a baboon, but you're all playing as apes who are part of a Soviet research facility where they were making super apes.
Okay.
And you're escaping the facility, and that is the whole
I'm down.
And then each ape has their own specialty, so unlike Eat the Reich where everyone shares the same stat blocks, there's like four stat blocks everyone shares, and then each ape has their own individual stat that is manifest with their powers, so everyone will have their one ability that other ones don't have, so that there's a bit of like overlap and like teamwork dynamic put in there. But anyways,
I love this.
So we're gonna do I'm gonna do a Kickstarter for my Relics, and I'll do that probably just PDF, because once again, that's gonna be like a 200 page document. No one needs to print that. That's not useful.
That's a big print.
Better that it be a PDF that is really accessible and has tons of bookmarks that is usable easily during your game on like a tablet or something or on your computer. And then we'll probably do a physical print of Laser Chimps with that. That'll probably be like whatever the price point ends up being, like $25. You get the zine of Laser Chimps and you get the PDF of Laser Chimps and
don't oversell it. We'll leave it for when I have you back in February.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Well, and then also once we get past that, I'm working on my proprietary game engine, which was a thing that I've been like really the dungeon engine. I've been really hesitant to approach because I feel like most game designers, that's their white whale, right? Like what is
their own system?
Yeah, and I didn't want to get trapped trying to figure out what I thought was like the best. And also, it's collaborative, so like I'd rather be known for making a really great hack of Aetherike, like my Psycho Killer, which some people like, that solo game. I'd rather use a good system, you know, and like put my own spin on it and do something interesting with that.
You could could have a whole career based on, hey, this is a fun hack of this game.
Yeah, and I think that is just, if not more legitimate than trying to find out a new way to roll dice. Right. Although I did find out a way to roll dice that doesn't exist anywhere that I like. So Swords will be coming out after that. So I guess like games on the docket, but now I've got a couple guys help me make those things, and it'll be less about me just pumping things out. Also, I think that Cameron and I are working on another game that I don't think I can talk about right now. They're kicking around, they being the Mothership group, kicking around doing something with, like, expanding the Panic Engine so that it's a system resource so people can build their own games with it. So,
I'll let you infer
in there. So, tons of stuff down the pipeline.
I love it. I'm so excited. It's a thing. I mentioned this with Penny in our last episode. The thing that I adore about the indie TTRPG scene is how easy it is to be excited about the stuff that people are working on.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people are making so many cool things
all
the time.
All the time.
There is always someone making something that's incredible.
And there's space for all of it. That's the coolest
and
thing.
And none of it is actively competing other than the way you're making the exact same thing.
Even if you're making, even if we're both making a thing using this system or using this, like, this idea, it doesn't matter. Because they won't be the same.
And that's why, like, I love Mothership Month so much. Like, I love the idea of saying, like, no, these are all cool, amazing, like, products worthy of your time. Even if you already have three of them. There's another one that's great and is worth the space and is worth your time and money.
Like, no PR bullshit. Every one of them is very cool. They're all, because it's just passionate people.
Yeah,
it's like you're saying. People are really excited about things, and it's really cool of Tuesday Night Games to try to figure out a way to. Sean, literally, in one of the videos they did at the beginning of the month, was like, "It's like we've been trying to figure out how to put money in the pockets of the people who built our brand up." It's the exact opposite of what some of these big box games do, where they don't value, of course you need the system to have the games, but you need the community. Be like a GM who's like only talks about how good of a GM they are and never talks about how fun their players are or how good their players are as a red flag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
especially Mothership with its, let's call it, rocky history.
Yeah.
Definitely. I don't want to frame this as like, as they're doing some weird PR move, but it is,
They got hamstrung by a bunch of things they couldn't control. You know what I mean? So it's
in their benefit to build up their community because their community was such a strong point.
It's in everyone's benefit. That's the secret there. That's why I get so frustrated with. I won't call out any publishers directly, but I get really frustrated with the mindset that they design these things kind of in a vacuum on Mount Olympus.
Right.
And it isn't the community that has made them be in people's homes and be people's, like, it's people that teach games to each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even in actual play is people doing a thing. There are choices, there's creativity, there is, you know, even a critical role is a, you know, there are, it's still people, you know what I mean? It's parasocial, it's different, but it's... It's still people, you know?
Yeah. I had a thought the other day about just how much free labor and stuff is done in... I mean, not even explicitly the TTRPG scene, but just in general. As marketing and advertising for various things, and...
It's crazy. It's crazy that like, if your bigger companies don't have brand ambassadors, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, liquor brands have ambassadors. I used to work in bars. You have... people that come by and hand out free samples and talk up the product and like teach you about the product because how is this tequila different than this tequila versus this tequila? It's crazy that, like you were saying, that they don't do that brand ambassador ship through a actual place, because that would be the easiest way to get return on your investment. But also, just like, it's weird to me that I'm a paid GM, right? But I get paid directly from my players. They're my patrons. And we have a personal relationship with each other. It's strange to me that the companies who benefit directly from all of us playing their game don't also have a system. I mean, even TikTok pays people who make content. They don't pay well, but you know what I mean.
It's money. It's not a lot of money, but it's money.
But they're not. Yeah,
it's there.
They're still acknowledging that that's part of the ecosystem. It is really weird how. Yeah, I mean, in the modern age, the amount of labor that people do outside TTRPG, social media is a great example.
Right.
Majority of social media is just people.
Right. It's just people advertising for various things, which has positive and negatives. Like,
Working. Yeah. If I'm an up and coming comedy writer, I make a bunch of shorts on TikTok. If I don't hit their 10,000 creator status, that's just free money for TikTok. That's just free. Free content. And we're kind of expected in this day and age. And honestly, that was my mindset when I first started. It was the first thing that that happened to me after I posted like my second game on Itch is Yokai. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Is it Yokai?
Yokai.
Yokai followed me very after that, which was super cool. I was like, oh, my hero. But then also, I posted a thing one night. It was stress out money. I posted a thing, I put $5 on it, and Yokai got in my comments on Itch, it's still there, and was like, you probably want to add some screenshots if you're asking for cash. Like, where's the value here? And then after that, I was like, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning I posted. The next morning I changed it. That thing's still pay what you want. Because with the TikTok stuff and almost all my content, it's like, how am I supposed to get people to give a toot about me at all? If they don't know what I can make. Yeah, I had to convince my wife on. You know, it's like,
right.
I'm spending a lot of time making stuff for TikTok. I promise I'm not just dopamine seeking. I am dopamine seeking, but I promise it's not just that.
Mm-hmm.
I promise that there's a method here, and that like the only way people are going to care about me is if they see the things that I make, if they resonate with them. And if I'm too worried about monetizing that on the front end because of the way our system's set up, I'm never going to get seen.
Right.
And the way the world is, I can't wait around hoping that indie publisher here or big name publisher here says, we like your stuff, please come work for us, or here's a project. I got to make that myself.
Right. You have to pave that road yourself.
And honestly, it was the best choice I ever made. Best choice I ever made was I just looked at Chris McDowell, the way he runs his Electric Bash, the Bastion Land Press blog. Mm-hmm. So he's got a Patreon, he's got these things, he's got these revenues, he's a big name creator, so he's very different than I, but, and then Yokai is like watching these people be like, no, I'm more concerned about community, I'm more concerned about having people have accessibility to these things, and showing them that I value them before they even know me is an important part of...
Right.
In games in general, I mean, it's even like, you know, it's the money part of it is important because of where we live and what we do. I'm not going to deny that. I'm literally sitting here looking at my backer kit number slowly tick up. It ticked up a little bit today. But it is a part of it, but it is not the part of it I enjoy.
It's the hard part. It's the hard part because if we didn't have to worry about being paid, we could just do this all day and it would be great and la di da.
So when I get pissed off at TikTok for not showing my stuff to people, it's not because I want the accolades. It's because I made a toy and no one's getting to see it.
Right.
I feel like Geppetto in his wood shop just holding fucking Pinocchio and just waiting for it to come to life.
Right, you're just like, come on.
Yeah.
Dance,
wooden boy.
If 20,000 people see this wooden boy, he'll come to life.
Yeah, exactly. And if I've spent that time and energy and I don't make it, because I don't make any money on TikTok, because I do photo posts. I'm not
eligible. Are those just ineligible wholly?
I am completely ineligible. All the stuff I make for TikTok, I've made 6 cents.
I didn't know that. That's TikTok.
Which, honestly... at one point they pushed photos for that reason because they're not doing that quite as much anymore. But I honestly don't hate that because now I've always been un, unbridled from needing to chase the algorithm to make that money. You know, I ended up starting my TikTok career hoping to be kind of an influencer so that I could funnel people into my paid GM stuff. And I accidentally became a TTRPG writer.
I accidentally became a designer.
which is what I really wanted to do anyways.
That's so funny.
Even if I didn't know it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that, I mean, and that gets to why, you know, I started this podcast and kind of the focus that I try to bring with my streams is just like, this thing is cool. And I want to tell people about this thing in the hopes, you know, in much the same way that, like, just trying to get more word about this thing out there.
Wow.
But, wait, God, we've been talking so long. Jack, I love you to death. We could talk forever.
We could.
Especially you and me, buddy. We could, we could spend all day.
No third party here. We're
But I gotta go have some food. I'm starving.
I have to eat, so we're
Jack, real quick, where can people find your stuff? Give me all your details, please.
You can, my website's also, I like that Cameron plugged this website that's not super good. Mine's not super good either. It's dungeon.club. Which is a cool name. That's the only reason I bring it up. No, if you want to find my stuff, Dungeon Club games are just Dungeon Club on Itch. And of course it's DNGN.
DNGN.club.
DungeonClub.itch.io is where all my games are. I've got tons of free stuff on there. My game Instant Dungeon. If you want to pick up any of my stuff, go grab Instant Dungeon. You can play it.
Everything's great. You might already have some of Jack's stuff if you've picked up a couple of the big Itch TTRPG bundles.
Yeah, I was in Palestine bundle and a Trans Rite bundle.
Nothing delights me more than someone telling me about a cool game on Itch and me seeing that I already own it, because that lets me know that
so nice.
Designer gives a fuck about social things.
That, and then obviously my TikTok is a big one. I'm on all socials, DNG and Club. Thank you so much for having me on, Matt. This was we were able to figure this out.
We've been struggling to schedule this for a little bit, but now, Jack, thank you so much for taking time out of your day, making time for me. Please. If you're listening to this, obviously the hope is that you go check out Jack's stuff, but please go check out Jack's stuff. He's a wonderful, wonderful friend of mine.
You don't have to spend any money. I would just want you
to give him money. Give him money.
I just want you to play with the things.
Give him money. Give him money for his things.
Sure.
Listen, he'll say what he wants. I'm going to say you give him money.
If you give me money, it feeds my kid directly. So that is.
There you go. What a great reason to give him money.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you. All right. Episode 3, fully done. Now, part 1, done. Part 2, done. I hope you enjoyed both parts. I don't feel bad about this being a two-part episode, because this was originally going to be two separate episodes where I interviewed Jack and I interviewed Cameron. So it ended up being a double-length episode. Doesn't feel that weird. It was a wild thing to have to kind of work towards in production and figure out how to do it. But we got there. I'm glad. And I'm glad we got these done before the end of the year. We can send this off. I have a couple ideas for people I would love to have on the show going forward. As always, if you want to be on the show, link to that is in the show notes. You can come find the show on Blue Sky and Instagram at What You Do in Pond. You can find the link to submit to be on the show. You can also just, hit me up on socials. Links to all my socials will be in the description, all that good stuff as well. If you have any questions, feedback, anything like that, feedback@mattcalder.com. You can email me and you can say, hey, Matt, I've got this question, I've got this feedback, anything like that. More than happy to hear from you. And please rate the show. If you're enjoying it, rate it on whatever podcast catcher thing, wherever you listen, wherever you can. If you can give it 5, that would be great. If you could drop a little message, that would be great. If you could tell your friends how much you like it, that would be cool. We're coming to, I think it's been 5 months since I started the podcast. And I've learned a lot. It's been kind of stressful. It's not as easy as I kind of thought it was going to be. And it was, I didn't think it was going to be easy, to be clear. It is much harder than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be, let's say, moderately hard. It turns out to be pretty hard. If you have ideas for guests, also, I think I missed to say, if you've got ideas for guests, please, you know, ping me on social media, ask them to submit the form, anything. I want to talk to as many cool people about all the cool stuff that they do as I can. All right. I'm recording this the day before Christmas now because I want to get these out the door before the end of the year. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you've listened to every episode so far, thank you so much. I love y'all so much. I appreciate the heck everybody listening. But I'm going to go have a good holiday, Merry New Year, and, you know, try not to drink too much eggnog, huh?